to Red Eye. I'm Greg Gutfeld in for Chaz Dexter, who still has some visible bruising. Sorry about that, Chaz. I'll go lighter next time. Let's go to TV's Andy Levy for our pregame report. Andy, what's coming up on tonight's show?
Thanks, Greg. Our top story tonight, President Obama says the position of the United States is that Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi must go, but says that is not the objective of our current military operations. The shocking story that will make you say, okay. Plus, Bill Gates says education should be focused on helping people get jobs after they graduate. But ironically, Steve Jobs seems to disagree. And finally, can Twitter make you jealous? Something new for you to worry about straight ahead, Greg.
Thank you, Andy.
Happy Fragrance Day, Greg.
I sent you a gift.
Oh, did you?
You stink.
Go to hell.
Your face is a fulcrum of delight.
I apologize for nothing.
Oh, please. Let's welcome our guest. So tired of him. I'm here tonight with Essie Cupp, author, columnist, and host of the Essie Cupp Show, named after her, on glennbeck.com, named after him. She's so hot that ancestry.com claims she's related to the sun. Diane Macedo, foxnews.com news editor. She's so cute that Barbie has a Diane Macedo dream house. Oh, didn't know that existed. And he has so many forms of hepatitis that they've actually run out of letters. It's my repulsive sidekick, Bill Schultz.
Look at Stern.
Yeah, there we go. I guess keep going. And he's the reason I read Reason. Sitting right next to me is Michael Moynihan, senior editor of Reason Magazine and Reason.com. He knows Reason like I know Weezin. I must quit smoking. And his awful breath reeks of death. It's our New York Times correspondent. Good to see you again, Pinch.
According to Times reporter Elizabeth Rosenthal, the common house cat is still the number one cause of death amongst our country's bird population. That's right. TV's Andy Levy is an accessory to murder. He's harboring two agents of death in his own household, by gum.
That is terrible.
It is terrible.
You're terrible.
Although I didn't really ask for your opinion.
Yes, but I gave it anyway.
Talk to my op-ed section.
Shut up. All right, to the Gregalog. It's a whiff of wisdom in an outhouse of idiocy.
Gregalog!
So by bombing Libya, Obama succeeds in pissing off his key supporters, the anti-war left, which shows you how naive the anti-war left is. If you actually believe a president will not go to war because he promised you, then you're like every girl on Rock of Love, hopelessly disappointed and high as a kite. People who campaign on peace often wage war in office. They'll just drag their feet a little longer, which is what Obama did. But I support the president because I try to be consistent on military matters. And to be fair, so are some on the anti-war left. Compare, for example, the currently angry Michael Moore to those lefties who, after reaming Bush for 8 years, are now oddly silent on Obama's war. That's kind of weird. Anyway, after Obama's behavior toward Egypt, he had little choice. Avoiding Gaddafi after kicking a meeker Mubarak out the door would smack of weakness. But here's why bombing Libya may be good. For 40 years, we've had to deal with Gaddafi's vile mug. It may not be a vital interest to get him, but it's justice. Think of all the crap he's done to innocent people, including Americans. Lastly, the action angers the right people. I dislike the anti-war movement because we, as humans, are all anti-war. It creates a false opposition that the rest of us are pro-war, but we're not. I'm pro-military. It's the high-speed rail with actual awesome purpose. More important, if the anti-war movement succeeds, evil all over would increase, because without the threat of punishment, the brutal will blossom, and inevitably America falls, which to the left is better than putting up a fight. And if you disagree with me, you, sir, are worse than Hitler. Bah.
Gregalog.
Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Did anything I say make sense?
No.
No?
I have no idea. I actually would have been listening.
Oh, okay.
Were you talking about Libya?
Yes, yeah, we are. Yeah, something yeah. that happened
it's
over
a great,
the weekend.
It's a great country.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree with, I am worse than Hitler, because I acknowledge this, because I do disagree with a few things. But let me just hone in on that little thing that I agree with. Walking up here to your lovely studios today, I did walk by an international answer protest.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know, remember these, like, desiccated Stalinists?
Yes.
Who are actually Stalinists. I mean, you can look this up. They love North Korea and Stalin, who doesn't?
If
they're on one side, I kind of have to be on the other, despite the fact that I totally disagree with you.
Yeah, I know. I mean, they are like, they are consistently wrong.
Yeah.
Which is nice, I guess. You know, they come to be so reliable. Diane, did Obama act too late, or was he prudent in taking his time?
I don't mind the fact that he took his time and tried to really round up external support. I don't think that it's any secret that our military is stretched thin, that our finances are stretched thin, and I don't really have a problem with getting other people together, the countries together, to help bear the burden, both financially and in terms of a human toll. Mm-hmm. My problem is that he hasn't really given us much information on what he's doing. I mean, even today he specifically held a press conference on this. All he could tell us was that the UN's mission is humanitarian and that the U.S. wants Gaddafi out. He would not specify if we are there to get Gaddafi out. Mm. No one really knows what's going on. And before we went into Iraq, there were a million questions. How are we going? Why are we going in? Yeah. How is this going to be executed? How are we getting out? None of those questions are being asked here, and that worries me.
Yeah, the other thing that worried me is the way he kept pronouncing Chile. Mm-hmm. I would pronounce it Chile. Like,
Chile?
Yeah, he skipped saying
talking about Chile.
Yeah. I would say Chile, like the restaurant Chili's.
Well, and like he did Pakistan.
Yes.
I mean, this is what he does.
And C instead of SE. Yep. I hate it when he does that. But SE, there's a point there. It's like, what is the what's the goal here? He says that it's the inevitable goal is regime change. However, that's not our military goal.
No.
Can that be the same thing? I don't know.
No, it's been, I mean, to Diane's point, it's been really frustrating. Hillary Clinton said one thing. Admiral Mike Mullen was on Fox this weekend saying a completely different thing. Obama said a number of things over the course of this catastrophe. And unfortunately, we come out looking really impotent, especially next to France. Hate to say it. I mean, it's pretty shocking how little leadership.
See,
I gotta say,
I spend a lot of time bashing him, but I'm kind of with Diane on this one. That in his campaign, he said he wasn't going to jump into anything, and so it took a while. It took a while to get everybody there in place. So I don't think he was. I don't know. I don't think he was necessarily dragging his heels because he. Well, he. I think he's reluctant.
I think he had absolutely no idea what to do.
I think
he was lost and stumbling through this, like he's stumbled through most international mm-hmm. foreign crises. He is lost. He has no experience. Or constitution that's prepared him for these kind of huge decisions.
A harsh indictment of the president.
Well, I stand by it.
With regards to his lack of specifics, I believe it's chapter 3 in The Art of War that says, tell your enemy exactly what you're going to do, when you're going to do it, how you're going to do it, and how many drones it's going to take to do it. So, bad on you, Obama. Bad on you.
How is this going to turn out? What do you think is going to happen?
How's it going to turn out?
Yeah.
Well, I hope it turns out better than the last time we bombed Libya. That really didn't do much. It depends. I mean, obviously, it depends on a number of things. If this kind of opposition pushes him, and he's getting a lot of opposition from the mainstream left and the radical left, if he stops and says, wait, hold on, and Republicans too, by the way, and stops short in this, I mean, look, we're going to have a kind of bifurcated country with a bunch of people we don't know in the East and Benghazi if they're psychopathic Al-Qaeda guys.
Yeah.
And then the weirdo that wears, you know,
the dress. What,
the dress. Is it a dress?
Actually, that's
is it a living gown?
Those are drapes from a Best Western.
I thought we settled on a comfort
Kmart. Yeah, it was a comfort from a Kmart. Or taken off the bed.
Well, he made it from drapes, which is very Sound of Music.
Yeah, exactly.
One of his favorite movies.
It's what he wanted. All right, I want to move on. This is my favorite story of the night. From winning Libyan hearts to losing liberal arts. In a discussion with U.S. governors earlier in the month, Bill Gates blamed that very type of education for our current know-nothing workforce. Mr. Microsoft railed against too many academic disciplines plaguing our campuses while lamenting the dearth of departments that are, quote, well correlated to areas that actually produce jobs. Forgot what dearth meant. But fear not, unhirable philosophy majors. Steve Jobs has your bong smoking back. The Apple CEO was also at the conference and praised the soft-handed set, saying, quote again, it's in Apple's DNA that technology alone is not enough. It's technology married with liberal arts, married with the humanities, that yields us the result that makes our hearts sing. And nowhere is that more true than in these post-PC devices. Puke. Oh, I like it. Meanwhile, Apple has yet to hire me, in spite of my women's lit degree with a minor in nude veganism. I feel like a thirsty camel. Very impressive for a camel. Hey, Essie, is this why there are so many man babies out there? There are these people with impressive degrees but living at home or working at Starbucks?
Yeah, I mean, or I could say to your viewers, look around this table, people. If you want to end up like these losers, and I include myself, then get a liberal arts degree. I'm telling you, take it from me. I have an art history degree from an Ivy League school. I can barely balance my checkbook.
Yeah.
And this is how I'm spending my nights. So go learn a trade, people.
You know, I have a feeling you don't want to be invited back to our show. She has just insulted our show twice. We've been so, if it wasn't for us, you wouldn't have your radio show.
I would be nowhere.
Diana, isn't Gates right? We don't teach trades. We teach, like, leisure pursuits.
Yeah, it's true, but, you know, I don't know. This reminds me of my brother-in-law, because he used to always give me crap about being a political science and communications double major.
I hate your brother-in-law. What does that mean?
Yeah. He used to always say, well, you'll graduate, and then what? You know, if you major in accounting, you'll graduate, you'll be an accountant. What do you know, political scientist? Well, guess what? I don't want to be an accountant, so that does me no good. I majored in poli-sci and comm. I got the job I wanted. Whatever. I say study whatever you want. Just don't come out with your hands out if what fulfilled your spirit so well doesn't fill your wallet.
Nice. The big thing that I keep reading about in places that I can't remember because I made that up. When you go to college, you get this fantastic degree and you can't use it, but you're too old to go to a trade school. Mm-hmm. So instead of actually, you know,
Are you talking about yourself again?
Yes, I am. I'm talking about myself. Why does it pick on Greg Knight? Anyway, do you see this as a big problem?
Yeah, no, it also reminds me of your brother-in-law and people that, and I don't know if he should be going to college. Too many people go to college.
Yeah.
We send everyone through, and, you know, I mean, you too can work at Reason Magazine if you study critical race theory as I did.
The band? You too?
Yeah. And no, I mean, there's nobody in the women's studies with a Y department that is developing the iOS 3 operating system. I could be wrong. We're gonna get letters
from engineers who majored in women's studies.
Right. Yes.
We're gonna get at least none. Hey, Bill, you majored in alcoholism, so your college degree did prepare you for the future.
It did prepare me. I've got a plastic sheet over my mattress now because I know if I drink too much, things are going to happen. Yeah.
Thank you for that.
I think all colleges across the United States should force kids to major in, well, not major, but they should force as a requirement home ec, because I can not iron my own clothing, nor do I know how to cook anything. Mm-hmm. I can't even boil water.
Do you even own an iron?
I absolutely do not. Mm-hmm. But stay out of my business. secondly, I think they should require all kids to major in economics, period. Yeah. I don't know what a hedge fund is. Yeah. I couldn't tell you how the stock market works. I can't balance my budget.
Right.
I think we should all major in build stuffology.
Yes.
I can't build anything. No one in this country can build anything.
I mean, this is the solution is a double major. They should make it a rule in colleges to double major where you major in that liberal arts thing. And the other thing is, like, you know, change a tire 101.
Right.
You know, for every hour you sit there and muddle over deconstructionism, the next hour you're like trying to figure out.
Yeah, but also, I mean, you were right. Not everyone deserves to go to college. That sounds harsh, but we need to create a nation of builders instead of just, you know, indulgent thinkers.
You sound like Stalinist.
I don't know. I didn't major in econ or anything, but I think this is all a supply and demand thing. Eventually, if everyone's going to college, no one's building anything, the people who are building things are going to make more money than the people who went to college, and more
From
people are going to stop going to college.
I hope so.
How dare you bring logic into this?
You just ruined my manufactured outrage. Yeah. Okay, from schools to tools. Does Twitter make you bitter? According to the New York Times, a website, reading other people's tweets sometimes isn't a treat. As the co-founder of photo sharing site Flickr says, it creates FOMO, fear of missing out. It's the feeling you get when people are tweeting about fun things and you're stuck inside reading Harry Potter to your 8 cats. Shout out to Andy Levy. Or as one professor said of her colleagues tweeting from the super annoying South by Southwest Festival, quote, it feels like high school. All the cool kids are at a cool party and I'm home on Fry night. I think that's short for Friday. Yeah. And of course, there's the look at me, I'm so cool tweets from people like Slate editor Jacob Weisberg, who wants people to know that they're invited to something that you are not. Quote, should I go to Google party? Tired, but also hungry. Hashtag Davos.
Oh, my God.
Go poop yourself.
Amazing. Yes.
Isn't that disgusting, salsa dancing dog? They got that little man into that furry suit, I'll never know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. My favorite, Michael, of these kinds of tweets are what I call the traveling tweets. Like when you
complain about the food in the Chilean airport,
just to let everybody know
that you're in Chile. Yeah. I hate that.
At a Chili's?
At a Chili's in Chile. Yeah. Actually, they have a place in Chile's called America.
That's
and it's actually edible food. All right? Do you agree with me that this is a problem?
Which bit is a problem? It's all a problem.
What
Tweeting is a problem.
Yes.
Jacob Weisberg is a problem. You know, Davos is a problem. No, I think it's really funny that I think that I am a FOMO.
Yeah.
Because I read everyone's tweets and I'm really sad that I'm not in Switzerland with like 5'1" guys that got beaten up in high school. Yeah, no, it's a huge problem.
Yeah.
No, I mean, but honestly, if you are racked with jealousy by reading Twitter, you have so many more problems.
That is true. Yeah. That is true. You know, because I don't even have a computer and I read Twitter, which is really interesting because I have them printed out and sent to me, which is kind of nuts. Diane, aren't those kind of tweets, though, the people that are talking about their trips and whatnot, a sign of insecurity? Oh, look at what I'm doing. I must be important.
Well, yes, but that's the point of all social media, isn't it? To show how fabulous your life seems through pictures and status updates and tweets and anything else that you can fabricate to make yourself look really, really cool.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of it is fabrication, isn't it, Essie? You make up all your tweets.
Of course. My account exists solely to make people jealous about my, you know, famous celebrity politician run-ins and to tell you where I'm going to be, you know, on television.
Yeah, the time you ran into Congressman McCracken, everybody went crazy. Senator, Senator Rick McJustice.
I know. I live an
he
exciting life.
Justice.
But the problem isn't Jacob Weisberg per se.
Yeah.
No, that's what it is. No, it's actually Jacob.
Let me finish. It's that Jacob Weisberg combines the I'm at this fabulous event with apathy.
Yes.
Like, I don't know if I'm going to go, though.
That's good. Yeah, good point.
No, F you, Jacob Weisberg. That's just mean.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. You have to be excited about the things you're going to.
No, but he's, like, ambivalent, which makes it doubly worse.
But that's fake ambivalence.
Yeah.
It's fake ambivalence. Ambivalence.
But that has nothing to do with Twitter. If he's on Twitter, he would have said the same thing if he was sitting at a table with us. Should I go to this party or not?
No. If he was sitting here, he'd get on you.
It's the same thing.
Or you. Yeah. I don't know, Jacob.
One at the Hotmail party coming up.
Speaking of Hotmail, Bill, none of your tweets ever make anybody jealous, right?
That's why everyone should follow me at @BillSchultz. No T, please. And I'll tell you why. Because I make your life sound awesome. Here is a little missive I wrote this Friday. OMG, y'all, the Rockford Files complete series is finally on DVD. Guess who's postponing suicide for another weekend? LOL.
You know, follow. It's interesting. But Bill raises a good point. Don't follow Bill Schultz with a T because the poor soul hates you.
Right. Bill Schultz with a T actually exists, and sometimes people send me hate tweets, and this poor sap gets them and has no idea where they're coming from.
He's not a sap. He's just unlucky in life, and that
his name
is...
This poor alleged sap gets these and has no idea where they're coming from. Sorry, Bill Schultz with a T. Learn how to spell Schultz, by the way.
All right. Do I have time for one more thing? All right, I got to go to the T's. Coming up, what's wrong with strudel anyway? Essie on her new book, What's Wrong with Strudel? The glazed toppings, relentless attack on the right. Bet you didn't know that. He's the child who claims he went to heaven. And no, there were no unicorns, sadly. I love my unicorns. Adorable kid, though. Pretty awesome. Well, he's 11 and already been to heaven. I speak of Colton Burpo, the boy who sat in Jesus' lap. Yep, his story has provoked gasps of disbelief and also sold a bunch of books. Yeah, I'm jealous. Well, it goes like this. In 2003, when he was only 4, Colton had a brush with death. And months after surviving the burst appendix, he described a trip to the next world where angels sang to him and he met his great-grandfather. The youngster also talked about stuff he'd no way of knowing. And that convinced his father, a pastor in Nebraska, that others should hear his story. The family soon landed a book deal. Now said book, Heaven is for Real, based on this kid, is a nonfiction bestseller. On Heaven, on Monday, Colton and his parents appeared on the Today Show.
After 17 days in the hospital, Colton emerged, but he was different. He began speaking about things he couldn't possibly know about. His mother's miscarriage, his dad's prayers.
I could see my dad in one room praying and talking to God. Mm-hmm. While I was sitting on Jesus's lap and I was looking down at him.
And what were you feeling then, sweetheart?
Well, You feel safe once you're in heaven.
He was later asked to describe what heaven looked like.
Well, there's a lot of colors, mm-hmm. a lot of people, and a vast number of animals.
Mm-hmm. And aren't the people all young and nobody wears glasses, you said?
Yes, nobody wears glasses, but you're in like your 20s, 30s. Mm.
Last November, Colton and his dad visited Fox and Friends.
You also, Colton, say that God is a very, very big person, right?
Yeah, he can actually fit the entire world into his hands.
Wow. So many people want to know what you now know. What about Jesus?
Well, Jesus, he had a rough but kind face, sea blue eyes, and a smile that lit up the heavens.
Bless his heart. Essie, in heaven, they don't wear glasses. Are they?
Psyched.
Are they? That means you're finally going to lose the glasses.
I might convert. Yes. I have to convert first. but I'm well on my way, thanks to Colton Burpo.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm.
Yeah.
He's an adorable kid.
He is adorable.
He's an adorable kid.
But can I say, Greg, he's going to be so obnoxious from now on.
Why?
Because anytime his parents say, you have to do something, he's going to be like, I talked to Jesus.
Yeah.
And he disagrees with you.
Yeah.
And he's pissed at you for telling
Jesus.
Me to do that.
Yeah. Diane, kids would never do something like this to get attention, right?
Well, I mean, I'm sure they would, but I don't know. I feel like it's like when your friend exaggerates to tell a story.
Yeah.
And you know that they're exaggerating, but it makes the story better, so you just let it go.
Yeah.
You get a book deal.
I mean,
and then you get a book deal.
Well, but the thing is, I mean, so he tells the story.
Perhaps I'm just jealous that the guy's selling a lot of books.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know.
You are.
How do we know that this isn't a dream that was elaborated on and now it's on all these talk shows? It's just kind of.
You got some.
Okay. His description of heaven is what we all think heaven is supposed to be when we were kids. So it came from somewhere.
It sounds like Cambodia in 1975. It's like no one wears glasses and the people are. Some people get that joke. It's a Khmer Rouge joke.
I thought. Yeah, I got it.
I didn't know that his father was a pastor.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I don't want to be too skeptical here, but it kind of stacks the deck if you're. And by the way, when did this happen? I mean, this happened in 2003.
Yeah, and he's now 11.
Did it just take him a really long time to write the book?
I don't know, but he's got a good vocabulary. I was very impressed with the use of the word vast. I was like, I didn't know what vast meant until weeks ago.
Right.
Bill, did you ever dream of heaven?
Sometimes. I would say my belief, as far as that's concerned, most of my beliefs, as far as heaven is concerned, come from the Church of Belinda Carlisle, which states simply that heaven is a place on earth.
It's a place on earth.
Right.
Now I subscribe to the Church of Colvin Burpo, I believe his name is.
Burpo.
Where heaven is getting a lucrative book deal.
Yes.
That to me is the new.
I
heaven.
Just think he had like a you know what they call a when somebody has a when they're walking towards the light when they're about to like what do you call
near death experience.
Near
death.
That's what it was. And,
yeah.
And I just hope that it doesn't influence the way he thinks later. If this is,
I think he's on his way.
All right.
This kid's got it made.
Yeah.
Welcome back. Let's find out if we've got anything wrong so far. For that, we go to TV's Andy Levy. What's the good word, Andy?
Greg, the good word is a New Zealand TV show about books and the people who love them. It's now in its third season, or third series, as they say up there. And it's hosted by Jeffrey Faber, Memorial Prize-winning author Emily Perkins. The Good Word is a lively mix of studio and documentary elements, Perkins and an all-star book review panel on the set, and journalist Finlay McDonald in the field looking at the stories behind famous New Zealand books, a delightful segment that could only be named Under the Covers. The Good Word airs Tuesdays at 9.05 p.m. on TVNZ7.
Mm. Aren't you forgetting something, Andy?
Oh, right. It also re-airs Fridays at 9.30 p.m.
But no one in the United States can actually watch this, so this information is a tad useless, no?
I happen to have a huge following in New Zealand, Greg. New Zealand, 100% pure.
I had no idea.
Wow. Yep.
Yeah.
Libya.
Member of the Maori tribe, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maori. I saw Once Were Warriors.
Love it.
Yeah. With the sound off. Libya. Greg, you said by going to war in Libya, Obama pisses off his key supporters, the anti-war left. Yeah, who else are they going to vote for?
That is true. Where are they going to go? Nader? Yep.
Exactly. Well, actually.
Yeah.
Michael, you oppose the bombing of Libya, but shouldn't you make it clear that you're also on the payroll of Saif al-Islam Gaddafi?
Well, he did pay for me to go to Libya last year. Mm-hmm. And it is, I can confirm, as somebody who's been on the ground, that it is the worst country on earth.
Did you really go?
I did.
Oh, I thought that was a joke.
No, no. I was in Libya.
I had no idea.
Yeah, it's terrible.
It is terrible.
It's like a big garbage heap, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. With pictures of Gaddafi.
I saw a lot of beaches.
That are covered in bottles, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure Gaddafi's little son there was really glad that they sponsored that trip for you.
Did you say little son?
Yeah.
Yeah, his little son. Yeah.
Scamp. Yeah.
Diane, I'm with you. I have absolutely no problem if other countries are going to take the lead in Libya. But here's the thing. Remember how at the first Pentagon briefing, we were told that more than 110 Tomahawk cruise missiles were fired by U.S. and British ships and subs?
I think 100 of them were U.S. missiles.
Well, it turns out, I think the last report was that two of them were fired by the British.
Right.
Yeah. So it'd be nice if someone else would take the lead, but I haven't seen it happen
yet. I agree with you. It doesn't look like it's happening anytime soon.
Yeah. S.E., you didn't seem to like the idea of France taking the lead. Does it really matter, though? It's not like Gaddafi's a threat to us.
Well, France took the lead in that they came out first.
Right.
But you're absolutely right that this is going to be ours. We're going to be blamed when this goes sour. And it will. Trust me. Gaddafi is going to be back in power in no time. And it's going to be our fault.
No, he's going to be back in power, but at a local convenience store.
Oh, I hope so.
Yeah, the Upper West Side.
Yeah.
Working out a deal.
Michael, the British Parliament a little earlier voted 557-13 in favor of the strikes against Libya. Isn't that quaint that they vote on stuff like that?
Who are the British? They're the people that shot the two missiles, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, that's great. I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
You know, I thank all 570, how many of them?
557.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
I'm dyslexic.
Yeah, all right. I will say, if one Tomahawk happens to go off course and hits wherever it is Al-Megrahi is staying, the war will have all been worth it.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Not exactly on Budsy, but a good point.
Yeah. No. I'm allowed to speak my mind, sir.
I don't recall.
This isn't Libya. Bill Gates says liberal arts education is worthless. Steve Jobs disagrees. Greg, you said Gates made his comments at a meeting with U.S. governors last week. Then you said that Jobs made his comments at the same meeting. No, Jobs made his comments at the unveiling of the iPad 2.
If only you could direct that to the person who wrote that.
Well, I can't because he's not on TV.
Oh, okay.
That liberal arts rhyme was pretty awesome, though, wasn't it?
Yeah. Oh, did you write that, though?
What? No.
Okay.
I just give credit where credit's due, and the
right.
Copy song.
Essie, you mentioned that you have a degree in art history. Can you talk at all about Kandinsky?
Actually, I can.
Yeah.
You know, I could, for example, tell you that the Impressionist period heavily influenced Kandinsky's Blue Rider period in the Abstract Expressionism movement, but that is only useful if I want a job at Media Matters.
That's a good point.
Did you get those earrings from the Museum of Natural History?
No, but I do have a Kandinsky tattoo on my leg.
It's a museum, right?
Do you?
Yes.
You know, he was heavily influenced by music, Essie.
Yes, I am aware of that.
Yeah, okay. I thought you might be.
That's why he named his bigger paintings Improvisations and
no.
Compositions.
You know, I feel like
I'm at
ones,
a Berkeley
the smaller
coffee
ones
shop
were
right now, and I'm about to throw up.
You're wrong.
Okay. No, I take your word for it. Bill, you can't iron your own clothing, seriously?
Say what?
You're a grown-ass man. You can't work an iron?
I've never owned one. I'd be worried I'd burn something.
You would.
Just absolutely pathetic.
Again, that is not
and that is, no, that is absolutely
is.
I'm budging your life right now.
I don't remember reading that in the back page of the New York Times.
Greg, you said they should make you double major or one of the majors is something like change a tire 101. How about you just learn to change a damn tire on your own? The two of you, seriously.
Because I learn to change a tire when I get a flat tire.
Right.
And I don't really feel like going out and practicing. So it'd be nice to have like a little class. You get up and you change your tire. Kind of nice.
That's the same as practicing.
I'm not going to practice.
It is practicing.
I want to get credit for it.
You know what? And you wouldn't go to the class either.
It wouldn't just be tire changing. It would be a lot of changing things.
All sorts of changes.
Yeah, yes.
Unbelievable.
Yes.
Twitter making people jealous. Michael, you said you read people's tweets and you're glad you're not in Switzerland with a bunch of 5'1" guys who got beat up in college. Cheap shot at Greg, dude.
Who, Greg?
Yeah.
Yeah,
no,
I was talking about Greg. You're the only one who picked up on that.
Yeah, I know. Okay, quickly. Boy says he saw heaven. Greg, you mentioned that Colton, the boy, described his trip to heaven after his appendix burst. When you had your appendix trouble a couple months ago, did you pay a visit to hell?
Yes, I did. It was not pretty. I don't really even have an answer for this. No. Okay. As you can tell, as I awkwardly suffer the answer.
Yes.
Andy.
Yeah.
I just went to hell.
Yes, you did.
Took us with you.
Yes. Yeah. I took all of our viewers.
Yes, you did.
On a little voyage.
A little field trip.
A little field trip to hell. Awkward silence hell.
Essie, are you concerned that nobody in heaven wears fake glasses as part of their shtick?
Good God, man.
I'll have to come up with something totally new up there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. By the way, Jesus had sea blue eyes.
Mm-hmm. And a smile that lit up the heavens.
Jesus from Bethlehem in Israel had sea blue
eyes. Yeah. Remember who his dad was, Andy. Yeah.
Well, I know that Willem Dafoe did, okay, in The Last Temptation of Christ. Yeah. So I get it.
Just lastly, Michael, you said this happened in 2003 and asked if it just took the kid a really long time to write the book. Well, he was four.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
Maybe cut him a break.
I'm just jealous that he is 11 and has a best-selling book.
Yeah.
In nonfiction, too.
I'm not going to say he had a ghostwriter, but he might have had an angel writer.
Coming up, what's up with sunroofs? Up next, we discuss Essie Cupp's new book, Sunroofs, and their malicious attack on the religious right. But first, Charlie Sheen, back in the news. Yeah, I know. We apologize in advance. He went from 2.5 men to 2.5 large. Yep, TMZ reports that Charlie Sheen will make a total of $7 million on his upcoming tour. It's called Charlie Sheen Live, My Violent Torpedo of Truth. I wonder what that means. The one-man show will feature Sheen trying to do comedy for over an hour. I know. Wow. He's scheduled to perform 21 dates and get 85% of the profits, and his projected cut is more than $250,000 per show. He'll also rake in cash on some after parties. Translation, Charlie Sheen will die at an after party. Meanwhile, NBC News is reporting Sheen has been offered his job back, but discussions are ongoing. Anyhow, let's discuss this in our
lightning round.
Oh, that's nice. Diane, you think people are going to go just to see him melt down?
I don't understand why you would go at all. I get bored after seeing him go crazy for like 5 minutes. Could you imagine watching that for an hour? It just gets old.
Yeah, I think it's because they want to get close to the Sheen, don't they?
Yeah, I want to get close to the Sheen.
You want to be close to the Sheen?
The Sheen of the Sheen.
Do you believe he's going to get his job back?
I don't even know what his job was before, to be totally honest. I know that he was on a show that had a child and John Cryer.
Yes.
I saw that in the newspaper.
Yeah, that was very good.
John Cryer was on it, Ducky. And so that's, I'm just rambling because I don't know what the show is.
It's all right.
I think he should get his show back.
There you go.
For no reason.
I was waiting for the outrage.
I'm outraged.
Essie, how is he going to do this when he can't smoke? Because everywhere he goes, he smokes.
Don't know, don't care, just know I will be there. Didn't mean to rhyme, but I mean, the only thing missing from the celebrity train wreck was always the live show.
Yeah.
And I have tickets, I am there. I cannot wait.
You have tickets?
You mean the violent missile?
Do you really?
Year plus one,
you have tickets? Are you lying?
I am not lying, I'm going.
I would love to go.
I got tickets the day they effing came out.
What can I do for the violent missile? Year plus one?
I have a plus one.
I'm a plus five.
We're gonna talk about it. We're gonna talk about it on the Essie Cupp Show. But I will tell you all about it, I promise. I can't wait!
Bill, real quick, I want to show you. This fella got a tattoo. Can we show the tattoo? It's a Charlie Sheen tattoo. I think this guy was he's in Canada or something. Anyway, Bill, does he look like Charlie Sheen?
He does. That's a great tattoo. And the guy that owns that tattoo is part of the Coalition of the Winning.
Yeah.
And I want to be a part of that. Yeah. I plan on drinking and drugging my way to a new promotion, much like Charlie Sheen just got.
He's going to dump out of it in a week, I predict. Okay, CNN report attempted to identify why there are only 450 airline pilots who are women in the entire world, 450. Possible explanations include the high cost of training, very few female pilots in the military, which makes sense, and stiff competition in an industry where seniority is everything. Also, they're chicks,
right?
Says a sexist somewhere at home. Fie on you, sexist at home. Women are just as every bit as equal as men are. Okay. I have to keep it there. Diane, should airlines be working to hire more female pilots?
I don't know really how you can work harder to hire a female pilot, not if they don't know how to fly.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, I don't really care who's in. Maybe they should call it something other than the cockpit if they want more females to go there, okay?
I had no idea where that was going.
Very happy about that.
And see, maybe women just don't want to be pilots. You can't hug a child with airplane wings.
Wow. Isn't that a country song?
Yeah, I think it is. That's a really bad one.
Merle Haggard song.
Yeah. No, I think this is really easy to explain. Two words, Amelia Earhart.
Really?
If Chuck Lindbergh had disappeared, I'm telling you, there'd be no dude pilots.
I had no idea. No, I don't think, I don't know.
I do.
Michael, as a sexist, you were telling me in the green room that you refuse to fly if there's a female pilot.
Oh, God, never. I don't like ladies. in all sorts of different areas of life. No, I mean, it is like the one thing where you can't fake it and say, like, well, we need to hire a couple of extra ladies and just put them in the cockpit.
There's no...
Because, you know, it's a bit of a liability if skimming.
I was joking. He didn't really say that. But you did say something smart. It's like, this is an industry where stressing diversity... one cares.
I can't remember who said it. I'm probably stealing it from someone who said that... that you don't want to fly an airline whose motto is we put diversity first.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
I think that explains a little.
It's like when they lowered the standards for like the police officer test, the fire test. I mean, I don't want someone going into a fire who didn't pass the legitimate test to be a fireman. I don't care what gender they are. And the same thing with the pilots. If you can fly a plane, go ahead and fly one. But I don't want them lowering the flight standards just to get more women in there.
I think women might actually be better pilots because they're tech. Usually more careful about things, and they, you know what I mean? They're not in a hurry.
Please. You've seen the way they are behind a wheel. You really want them in a cockpit?
You're
up
crazy.
Top.
Yeah.
That's Bill playing the role of a sexist. But Bill, you were actually a flight attendant in the 80s for Shaw, Sequential Hermaphrodite Airlines. What was your take?
I'm a dude. Thank you very much. The charade will end right now. And I will say there are not many male stewardesses. And those that are usually go crazy.
They're called stewards.
Well, that's probably why. Yes. I'm taking my point back.
All right, all right. I don't know if we came to a conclusion on that, but I say, you go, girl.
Oh, my God.
Last topic, survey for men's health. I can't believe I did that. I think that might be the only time I've ever said that.
To fly trainees.
All right. The survey found that one in four brides didn't like their proposals. Reasons for their dislike range from wishing the proposal was more romantic, more original, more private, or that it was too over the top. Diane, why are so many women ungrateful?
From which category? The proposal without a ring part, or the told everybody else before they actually told her part? I mean, which one of the categories did you have a problem with?
Ooh, I never thought of those. But they never bring up. They didn't bring up the ring, did they? Bessie, what makes a bad proposal? What
would be the perfect proposing.
Yeah.
Not interested. Immediate turnoff. Don't propose. No, but I mean, this is not at all surprising. I mean, women are raised at a very young age to plot this moment out in their head. Every detail done, so God forbid the dude deviates from the script that she's been clinging to for the past 25 years, he's screwed. We do not make it easy on you guys.
Women.
Yeah.
Phil, how come you've never married any of the mothers of your many, many children?
I don't know where they are, which, good thing. And secondly, kind of what Macedo touched on, all of those are red herrings to the fact that they didn't like the ring, The Rock wasn't big enough, and I've lost my train of thought.
You'd be great.
Women are greedy, Greg.
You'd be great.
And they can't drive.
It's like you're going to be really impressed by the ring, and then you take them to the movie.
And then scare the bejesus out of them and steal their wallet.
Exactly.
Yes.
That's what's a good proposal. I hate the over-the-top proposals. Like, you do it at the Jumbotron. I hate
that. Those are romantic.
Yeah, I
never propose via Jumbotron, ever.
I proposed to my wife, and if you're watching, Joanne, I apologize for this now, at an arena football game on the Jumbotron.
No, you didn't.
Did you really?
No, I didn't. Does arena football even exist anymore?
You know what I kind of recommend? This is true. My brother, my middle brother, Jonathan, he proposed right outside of a dumpster on the way to a restaurant because he figured that's the one place you'd think he wouldn't propose.
All right.
Oh, that's really
cool. On a depressing note like that, we're going to take a break.
It's romantic.
When we return, we're going to do some stuff, fun stuff. And you're invited. Not you, though. That guy in the robe. The guy in the robe.
Stop watching you.
Not you. Time to go back to TV's Andy Levy for the post-game wrap-up.
Thanks, Greg. SE, big plans this weekend coming up?
Yeah, I'm going to Santa Barbara for the first part of the weekend to speak at an event at the Reagan Ranch. And then on Monday, I'll be speaking at ASU. So if you're in the Phoenix area, come on by and say hi, but don't be scary. Okay.
I'm not in the Phoenix area.
Okay.
I hope you tweet while you're there.
Be normal. Oh, I will. Yeah. You know I will.
Let us know how the flights go.
Yeah. Mention your business.
Hey, Michael, how come every single Scandinavian crime writer like Stieg Larsson or are communists?
Because everyone in Sweden is a communist. Doesn't that? Yeah, it just kind of follows, yeah.
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 All right.
There you go.
Thanks for clearing that up.
No problem. I'd be happy to any other Swedish questions you have.
Okay.
It's a really interesting post-game question.
Yeah. Diane, what's your latest story over at foxnews.com?
Got one. I think it's going up tomorrow on Japanese adoptions amid the whole disaster. Turns out foreigners looking to adopt orphans need not apply.
Wow.
Check it out.
Excellent. Bill, how was the zoo?
Wasn't so great. turns out animals are kind of wusses, and even though it was a balmy 50 degrees, half of the cages were empty. Is
really?
It just me, Andrew, Elizabeth, Levy, or are they not covered in fur?
You know what? That's why they're going extinct.
Thank you.
They can't do.
Actually, it's interesting you mentioned that. The only guy that was entertaining was the very endangered polar bear. He was throwing a ball around.
No, I don't think you were at the zoo. You were at Manhattan Mini Storage.
No wonder I saw so many folded clothes.
They're really nearby. I made the same mistake with my mom.